39. After 10 minutes of aimless driving through a maze of tunnels, Flores slows the lead cart to a stop, the danger well behind us. Protected by an endless barren steel tube, I feel relatively safe from immediate danger. But the past and what lives in it is far more volatile than I would have guessed. I suppose whoever was in charge of the Smithsonian Institute's efforts to hide the giants commingling with humanity's past would have guessed, but did any of them know that Sul Kalu was a psychopath with purple blood? Or maybe they did. Maybe someone decided that people weren't ready to hear that monsters were real, particularly ones whose origins are biblical. But would a scientific organization really hide the truth, even if it wasn't explainable? Langdon is proof of that. Of course, maybe the Smithsonian is a puppet for a secret cabal or a conspiratorial group. History is full of them. I'm not sure what could be gained by hiding the existence of giants or Nephilim. I don't know enough about them. At the same time, it could all just be a conspiracy theory. Maybe the giant remains were lost. Maybe the Smithsonian is simply sitting on the finds until they've made sense of them. I feel like there's a novel in there somewhere, but that's a riddle for someone else to sort through. Right now, I need to figure out how to survive a living giant with a hard-on for carnage and shut down the particle collider. But not yet, I think. I'm not thrilled about the idea of jumping further back in time. But we're not prepared for life in the Ice Age. The people of Black Creek are a resourceful lot, and those from earlier generations will be accustomed to adapting to harsh conditions, but surviving in the Ice Age long-term won't be possible. We need to jump again, but that's where this needs to end. And that can't happen if we're stuck in a maze, hiding from a giant, like rabbits. "Any idea where we are?" Flores asks, sliding out of the lead cart. I shake my head. We traveled in a steady downward slope, but we made a lot of turns along the way. All I really know is that we haven't reached the mountain's bottom. "We need to head downhill until the ground levels out, then I can take a look. If the topography is similar enough, I'll be able to point us in the right direction. But we're going to stop several times to keep our bearings in this maze."
"So you're saying we'll have to go for it?"
Kuznaski says. He barely sounds like himself, and his faux positive statement feels wrong. Seeing himself die has left him shaken.
"What?"
he says, noting my worried expression.
"Oh, I see what happened. You thought I said go for it, like, yeah, let's do this, like I'm fucking Richard Simmons or some shit. I said go for it, like the fuzzy little animal."
He pokes his index finger up through his clenched hand, mimicking the small rodent's head popping up and down in the ground.
"Gopher, not go for." He sighs. "This fucking day."
Then he sits back and looks at the empty curved ceiling. I share his exasperation. How long has it been since the day began? 7 hours and thousands of years? I look at my watch. 8 hours, 13 minutes. We've got a few hours of daylight left, depending on the season. Facing Sul Kalu in the dark is not my idea of a fun party. Best if we finish this up ASAP. "How is she?" Cassie asks, stepping up beside the unconscious Enola. My father slips his hand under her coat, holding it against her arm.
"Warming up, but..."
He motions to her closed eyes. "She'll live, though. She's tough."
"Tough might not be enough,"
Flores says, and then to me. "Right up front?" My father nods his approval.
"You're not leaving us?"
Owen asks. "Just switching carts," I tell him. He's still using his body heat to insulate Enola. "Just keep on taking care of her, okay?" I join Flores and Cassie in the front vehicle, riding shotgun.
"Where to?"
Flores asks.
"Down,"
I say. "All roads lead to Black Creek," Cassie says with an attempt at a smile. "Because, you know, Rome hasn't been built yet." The carts hum downhill. Much of the path is straight, but there are occasional side passages, and when the mountain gets steep, switchbacks. The carts handle the journey down with ease. I'm not sure how they'd fare going back up, or how much power they have. Thinking of power, I notice that some tunnels have little to no cabling, while others are thick with this stuff, lining both walls. I direct Flores to follow them, and I find our path downhill is steady. The cabled tunnels are also warmer, suggesting a lot of power is flowing through them. It's another 10 minutes of monotonous tunnel before the decline fades and then goes level. When I spot a ladder up ahead, I tap Flores on the shoulder. Stop there. The ladder leads to another hatch, but unlike the first, this one doesn't have a locking mechanism. Instead, it's an actual manhole cover with the letters BC-KY embossed in it. I climb the ladder and put my shoulder into it, shoving the heavy metal up. Once it clears the lip, I push it to the side, embedding it in a wall of white. The snow atop it falls down through the hole and all over me. Again. My skin bristles at the cold, but I push past my discomfort and scramble up. You'd think I'd be prepared for anything at this point, but I was really hoping to find an uninteresting view with which to orient myself. Instead, I'm greeted by a fresh scene of horror. A dozen men and women litter an open clearing. Some are face down in the snow. Some are huddled together against the elements. One of them is still standing. But they are all frozen solid. And if that wasn't bad enough, they're not alone. A herd of mammoths stands just 100 feet away. I suspect they were staring down the frozen figures, trying to make sense of them, when I gophered out of the ground and startled them. The largest of them, the matriarch, takes a step forward, huffing. Easy, girl, I say, holding out my hands, like anything I say or do will soothe her frayed nerves. Several of the elephants start stomping on the ground. Below me, I hear Kuzneski say, "Geez, what the hell is up there?" When I look down to answer, I'm aware of a smile growing on my face. Of all the things I've experienced since the flux began, these ancient and formerly extinct elephant ancestors are the most amazing. I wouldn't say I was obsessed with dinosaurs and Ice Age creatures as a kid, but I had my fair share of books on the subjects and spent hours turning through those pages, mostly looking at the pictures, but I developed enough wonder about these creatures to really enjoy seeing them in the flesh. In retrospect, the saber-toothed cat was spectacular as well, but it's hard to appreciate something that would eat you alive if given the chance. That said, I think the mammoths are about to attempt squashing me. I take a quick look around and immediately recognize the landscape. I'm home. The house is still there, I'm guessing because of its proximity to the network of tunnels, but it's taken a beating. I'm about to duck back down when I realize that this house did not belong to me. It belonged to my future self. That's when I notice the damage. A sidewall has been destroyed, the insides filling with snowdrifts. Parts of the outer wall look scorched and bullet holes riddle the front. A battle was fought here. While I'm not sure whether my future self won that fight, he survived it. There's nothing for me here. Either Synergy, the authorities, or I would have taken any weapons I might have had squirreled away. And anything they left behind would have been fair game for the folks in town who don't have much. Anything of value would have been scavenged long ago. As for my personal belongings, I glance down at my father and Owen. I have everything I need. From my house, I look left toward Black Creek. I can't see the town from my place in any year, but there's no mistaking the columns of smoke rising into the sky for anything else. Black Creek is still there, and it's still populated. The matriarch trumpets and stomps her foot. The volume of her blast makes me cringe, not just because it hurts my ears, but because anything within a few miles will have heard the sound. I hold my breath in the moments that follow, listening to the cold wind, the sound of mammoth lungs breathing, and then the haunting howl of Tsul Kalu. The call is distant, but it spooks the mammoths as much as it does me. The matriarch reels around and flees, the rest of the pack following on her heels. They've heard that sound before, I think, watching the terrified creatures charge away. They know what it is, what it means. How long have the giants lived here? How long before man arrived? Knowing there is no one alive who might possibly have the answers to those questions, I follow the matriarch's lead and retreat. Back inside, I make no mention of the giant's howl, but it doesn't take an empath to know I've been shaken. When I get back into the cart, Flores gives me a sideways glance. We good? For now, I say. We head out again, this time with a general sense of where we should be heading. We make a few turns along the way, and after a short drive, we come to a stop beneath another Black Creek manhole. Once again, I take the lead, scaling the ladder and shoving away the manhole, groaning as I'm covered in another pile of snow. I scale the ladder and find myself smack dab in the center of town, the courthouse in front of me, the small library behind. I draw my pistol and scan the area. Aside from smoke rising from the chimneys of the buildings that have them, including the courthouse, it's a ghost town. But there's evidence of occupation, mostly in the form of footprints. The question is, whose footprints? What time are they from? And will they be friendly?
About far enough, I reckon,
a man says from behind me. His voice is followed by the click of a rifle's hammer being locked into place.
And in case you're thinking of retreating back down your hole, I've got good enough aim to drop you, and I have no qualms about putting a hole or two in someone who works for Synergy.
The man's threat tells me a few things. First, he knows who I am, and who I work for. He also knows who's responsible for this mess. Last and worst, I believe his threat is genuine.